Okay, Paul, can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. So we
you
are.
Did it.
We're. They won't put a note in my file today. Well, they probably will, but
not for this.
Well, we are so excited to have you up here. And June, I was trying to remember the last time you were here was 2012. And have you been there before that?
Had I been there before that? I don't remember.
Okay.
Maybe. One time I was in, I can't remember what city in Alaska I was in. It might have been Juneau. And they sent a driver for me. And when I went out from the hotel to, you know, to the car to be driven to the venue, somebody flashed a, I don't know, like a police ID or a FBI ID, I forget which, and my driver was arrested before I could get the ride to the venue, but I forget where in Alaska that was. It's a rough and tumble area.
That was definitely not Juneau.
Oh, you don't think it was Juneau?
We don't have that kind of stuff in Juneau.
Oh, all right, good. I feel sick. And then the last time I was there, they did take me to. They took me out on the glacier, which was great. I still have beautiful photographs from that. And then they took me to this, nature observatory place there, and they had like a telescope or something, you know, lined up so that you could see some sort of creature in its den, but the creature wasn't in its den. And so we just watched like an empty apartment, with the feeling that it might show up any minute.
Well, maybe the critter will be back on this trip.
I'm hoping. Very much hoping. I forget what it was. I forget what kind of... might have been a software developer. I can't remember what it was that was supposed to live in that den. Do you know? Have you been up there?
I do know of a beaver den that has a beaver cam in it.
Oh, yes, that's what it was. Yeah, it was like the Kim Kardashian of beavers, except for they were out when we were there.
Well, let's hope that it's back. Mm-hmm. let's see. We are all, of course, as public media fans and listeners, huge fans of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And I was just wondering why you and that show's model are such a great fit. I was wondering how you would explain that, just your style of comedy and how that show works. What is it that explains the great chemistry that you have?
Well, you know, from the first time I was on the show and when my first trial run, back then we didn't have an audience in front of us and we were not all in the same room as we are now when you hear the show. Now we're somewhere. We're either in Chicago in the basement of a bank, in this auditorium with about 500 people in front of us, or we're, you know, somewhere else around the country in some sort of theater. But we're all together. Whereas when I first started doing the show, you just went to the studio near your house, you know, wherever you lived, nearest your house, and you were hooked up via wire with everybody else, and there was no live audience. But from the minute I sat down in the chair, and the show began, and they explained to me how it worked. I had never heard it before. But from the minute I sat down in the chair, you know, you wear a goofy headset. In my headset, the director would say, jump in anytime, say anything you want. That is extraordinary in the show business. I can only think of, you know, one other time where anyone ever said that to me. And the fact that they bring people on, like myself, and allow them to, you know, do what they do, well, that's the that's the genius of it. Sorry, I'm joking to that. I have SARS. I don't think it's nearly as communicable as they say. The show business, as a general rule, has a very, very long history of hiring people and then telling them not to do what they do. So this was extraordinary. And I think it's just wise of them to do that. So we all, you think of stuff and you say it. And, sometimes it sticks. Sometimes it doesn't, I suppose. But for the most part, that sort of freewheeling feeling, the number one comment that I hear when people come up to me on the street and say something about Wait, is, you guys sound like you're having so much fun. And you know what? We are.
That's great. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you started stand-up in about 1979?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. So what does that make it? 30?
I'm an English major, sorry. No help here.
Okay, wait. So it's 39 years, is that right? If I started 78? No, 79, and now it's... Yeah. I think it's 39 years. Oh, my gosh. That's big. It's got to be, because last year I kept saying 38 years.
Since 79 on that 39-year journey, when did you become so interactive with the audience and so improvisational? Because I think that's among the things people love about you.
Well, one time years ago I made an independent film. It's a very bad independent film, but it was an independent film, and we made it in North Carolina, and there was a scene where we needed a cow. We needed just one cow in a scene. And so we needed to separate out a cow from the rest of the cows on this ranch. So we go to this ranch, and I watch this man who was very soft-spoken, who's the ranch guy. He says to his dog, which was about, a foot high, if that, teeny little dog, he tells it to go get a cow. And in a few minutes, the dog has gotten a cow. And then he says, practically whispers to this dog, he says, come by, Rose. Rose was the name of the dog. And it was the most extraordinary thing I've ever seen in my life. And I looked up at the guy afterwards, and I said, how the hell did you do that? And he said, the hardest thing is getting the dog not to do that. And that's sort of me as a comic, I think. From the very first time I went on stage as an open micer, you got 5 minutes, and there were lots of people who wanted to do open mic night, so you really were supposed to stick to your 5 minutes. And I had memorized these jokes I had written for myself. It was 5 minutes to the second. But the minute I got on stage, I saw something that distracted me. I forget what it was now. So I talked to somebody, and, the next thing I know, I don't know where I am in time in my 5 minutes. And because I went over, and of course it makes everybody mad, now I figure, okay, the worst thing I can do is talk to somebody in the audience. I've never been able to not. And I forget at what point I finally figured out that I should drop the struggle not to, because that was the magic of the night. But I really, when I began, I thought it was like a liability. I thought it was like a really bad thing. It meant that I was somehow undisciplined, which I guess I am.
I guess that sort of segues into my next question about how you'll never do the same show twice. Is that true?
Yeah. There's a lot of material that I repeat, by the way. It's not like you'll come to a show and never hear something that you heard before. I think I've been doing my international House of Pancakes jokes for a solid 39 years. My act, for one thing, evolves as time goes on. When I first started out, I was talking about bussing tables and taking public transportation. And for the last, 20-something years, I've been talking about raising a house full of kids and animals. But I have, there's two things. One is, somewhere in my head, there's 39 years of material rattling around. And although my act is largely autobiographical, my favorite part of the night is just talking to the audience. I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? I've after all these years, embraced the flaw of being distracted by the audience. So I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies emerge of audience members, and I use that from which to set my sails. And so I don't know what they're going to say, and therefore I don't know what I'm going to say, and therefore I don't know what the next, sometimes they'll say something that reminds me of a piece of material that I have, and I move in that direction. And other times, I just, you know, make stuff up that's unique to just that night. And I've purposely laid in into my act some things that I do where, like, for example, I occasionally do a PowerPoint presentation, and I ask a person in the crowd if they've done a PowerPoint presentation before, you know, to a group of people, and I ask them about what they do, and I go from there, and because the PowerPoint presentation is the enemy of education and intelligent oration, so there are, you know, points where I really have deliberately allowed myself to move away from anything scripted.
So yeah, the where are you from and what do you do part. I listened to you do a bit, I think in Maine once, where you discovered a snow ranger.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you said that was possibly the pinnacle of your career. And where do you go from there? Have you found the next snow ranger, so to speak?
I really haven't. The snow ranger was, and he was where his wife, as I recall, managed a forest. It was extraordinary, these people, because I have never heard of the position snow ranger. I didn't even know what to make of that. And he was great when you got him talking about it. That's the thing, too, about people. My manager tells people that I know who to talk to, which is such a load of crap. I have no idea. And by the way, half the time, I can't even see people because of the lights. I just, you know, hear, I ask a question and somebody responds and I hear a voice and I go, that guy over there. And sometimes it's not even a guy and we have to go through that. But you get anybody talking for a few minutes and they're just great.
All right. We have a stand-up comedy troupe here in Juneau. It's titled, their name is Club Baby Seal. And I'm sure some of the members of that comedy troupe will be at the show. What's your advice for young comedians?
My advice is do what's in your heart. You know, that will make you unique. You know, I mean, we're all not, you know, we are, and yet, you know, we're not polar opposites by any means. Even if you're talking on the same subject to someone else, likely you have your, you know, your own unique take on it. But if you allow your relationship with the audience and what's in your heart to steer what you're doing, I don't think you can go wrong.
Okay. Well, I want to let you go here. Last question. Juneau, what should we expect on Thursday night? What are you looking forward to? How should we dress? Anything like that, Paula?
Oh, I say dress comfortably. It's going to be a long night. I think I usually do about 2 hours. And so come early so you can use the bathroom. That's important. And I don't know. I think you can expect a night of hewing laughter.
And thinking of like the snow ranger, should people come in? You know, I guess you said you can't really see them, so maybe it doesn't matter if they like wear their uniforms or anything like that.
No, they needn't wear their uniform. I want them to be comfortable and happy, unless wearing their uniform makes them comfortable and happy. I'll be wearing my uniform. I'll be wearing a colorful suit, which is my uniform. It doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter what they wore. Wouldn't matter who came. There's always gold somewhere in the audience.
Well, Paula, we're so honored to have you up here and looking forward to it. See you on Thursday. Is there anything I should have asked or anything else you want to let us know?
Not that I can think of. I'm just looking forward to seeing you guys.
All right. Well, safe travels, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Paula.